Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another Navit podcast episode. I'm your co-host, Maya Monell, here with my always co-host, Aaron Popworth. Hey, Aaron, how's it going?
Good. Hi, Maya. Hi, everyone.
Y'all, we are recording this on the Friday of Memorial Day weekend, and you should be able to see, I hope, like, our smiles are coming across your headphones and ears right now, because we are so excited. We're also super excited to dive into this topic. I feel like every time we're talking to you all, I'm always saying that we're really excited, but we really are. So today we're diving into one of our key pillars to fostering financial wellness, which surrounds the concept of knowledge. Bear with us. This seems very macro. I promise you we'll get there and we'll give you some tangible outcomes. But you know, we want to focus on this topic today because we've spoken a lot about negative coping behaviors and specifically how to change your mindset towards one that's more abundant and in time more resilient. So if you caught our episode a couple weeks ago, we were talking a lot about resilience. If you caught our episode 2 weeks ago, we were also talking about the difference and intersection between mindset and mindfulness with one of our resident psychologists. So now, and today, we're going to talk about a key tried and true way to foster financial wellness, mitigate stress, and ultimately pursue that abundance mindset that Aaron is always talking our ear off about.
You know you love it.
So today we're talking about knowledge. So let's start off by asking our resident behavioral specialist, Aaron, why is knowledge so important in fostering financial wellness?
Like you said, I always love these topics, and I love them because we talk about the building blocks to financial health, right? And you need the basics of all these things like mindset, which we're going to, all this that we're talking about, and then like actual money to get to a point of like basic financial health that you can then start building your wealth and really like legacy, like growth of your money. So knowledge, that's why we're so excited about this topic, is one of the key elements of really starting the foundation of behavior change. Like, right, we said in a previous episode about mindfulness, you know, the first step to any sort of change is self-awareness. And that becomes like, there is something going on. It doesn't necessarily, knowledge is part of that. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, there is something going on with me physiologically. There's the self-awareness in this case is literally like, okay, I am an adult. I function in a financial system that is specific to my country and my career and whatever's happening. So thus the awareness becomes, how do I start to gain even little bits of knowledge of how the system works? And once you start, you know, it really is the same concept in the overall behavior changes. Like, you start small, you start with that like one step. Okay, I'm going to learn a little bit about, you know, basic, like checking. What's the difference between checking and a savings account, right? And then you learn, okay, there's something about fees in here and like restrictions. Okay, what does that mean? Like, what are fees? How do banks make money off me? You know, and you just like step by step, the knowledge is the basis that you can just build on of the awareness of how your money is affected, how you function in this society.
I love it. I think it's a really exciting topic. We're talking a lot about different components to financial knowledge, obviously, in our app every day, and we're going to get into that as well. But I really want to dive in from my more fitness background and side of this equation. I've always been rather skeptical of saying knowledge will solve a behavioral problem. And the reason why I think a lot of researchers and myself included in that bucket think that is because we often take the physiological approach and we often take the tangible outcomes as the key marker of a result, right? Like, we're always looking at, you know, in terms of fitness, obviously body mass, right? Body mass index is something that researchers study religiously to try and, you know, figure out what physical wellness routines will impact BMI over time. So,
or if you like me, you actively avoid any sort of measurement. Yes. But yes, fair enough. A marker.
Fair enough. It's a marker. And the reason why we're skeptical of this is because I'm pretty confident in saying that most people with diabetes, preventable diabetes in the country, know that eating healthy and exercising for, you know, 30 minutes a day can prevent that disease. And that's just the reality of the situation. And so the reason why those studying these more physical components to knowledge and behavioral change are skeptical of that approach is to say, you know, it hasn't proven effective for Americans in our society, at least. And, you know, I would then argue that, you know, that is, we have to disassociate the physical with the mental, and most specifically with the financial. You know, just because you know all these things, and just because I know all of these things, and I'm a health junkie, but I still have fudge sitting on my counter that I'm about to annihilate this weekend. You know, like, just because I know these things are bad for me does not mean that, yeah, that you need to indulge all the time. But the cool thing about finance and the topic that we're presenting around, you know, incremental changes to your routine every day can actually see tangible outcomes so fast. You know, it's not a physical transformation. Literally, the $5 you save today means that you have five extra dollars in your pocket tomorrow, means you have 150 every month, means what? You have 450 every quarter or every 3 months. And then you all almost, yeah, and then you have like $18,000 in a year. I mean, yeah. Come on.
I mean, you know, it's right there.
You can't do that. Yeah, it's right there. And you can literally see it change because of these incremental behaviors every single day. And so that's why, you know, I think it's funny, and we're going to get to the older mindset around financial services and why a lot of people feel like they've been left out of the equation. But I think, and Aaron and I included, you know, we get a lot of flack for saying that we're focusing on knowledge at Navit. You know, we get a lot of flack for saying that, you know, we value in-app content that educates our user. But the reason we do that is because we've seen it transform the way we think about money. Our teammates have seen the same, and our users have seen the same. So, you know, it's just a matter of presenting it in digestible bites that aren't so overcomplicated. You know, like financial topics and financial resources and financial education is not complicated. But the industry has led us to believe that it should be, because guess what? That's how banks make money. Banks make money by you walking into the branch and talking to a financial advisor.
Right. So, yeah, with a banker. I think there, you have a lot of good things there to dissect. I think the first one on the health side is that, you know, another plug for behavior change around finances is to make a health change, to say, okay, I am no longer going to eat this sugar. I'm no longer going to, you know, I don't know, have these habits. You are actually having to physiologically shift, you know, you go through withdrawals, right? You have like, this is no longer in my life. My body is physiologically like changing and I don't like it, or I miss it. Or there's, you know, there's a lot of like that kind of integration into the physical response is a really powerful deterrent for people to like sustain long-term change in the health world. But from a health, and there are a lot of similar components in the financial world, because again, a lot of people use what, and when we go back to the mental, the mindfulness, like the mental space around finances as a crutch, like, oh, you know, like the online shop, I'm not happy, so I'm going to do online shopping. I'm going to get new things, right? That kind of consumerism. But the reality to your point is, when you start to make those little incremental shifts with the financial change, you start to understand what, you know, long-term, you know, savings or compound interest or dollar cost averaging, when you start to understand these basic concepts, the actual movement, like the thing that you do where you like take the $5 out of your checking account and put it in your savings account, or you start depositing all your money in savings and only taking out what you spend to checking every month.
Right.
That actually had the only physiological change that actually affects is, right, your mental, your neurological pathways that are saying, hey, if I do this, I have more money. Hey, good job. And you're just, so it's really only a brain reaction, as opposed to in the health world, it's also like a physical body reaction, right?
We see it. Yeah.
You see it. Yeah. So the thing, so that's why I think finances are so powerful when you're talking about kind of overall health and wellness, is because you like literally try it, like one thing for 30 days, your money grows. Like it yep. literally just changes. Right. And, you yep. know, even if, or investing, you know, depending on the stock market, like literally your brokerage account is being funded. That just, and so, and it's not, you know, you're not having a withdrawal from your chocolate or whatever. So I think it's a great right. place to start. And I wish people would do that. Like, I think it'd be interesting if health practitioners could like say, hey, start with one thing that's not as hard, and then move into like, look, you have built this new neural pathway. Let's talk about other things that are more painful.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's a really exciting, topic to consider how that impacts your overall wellness. And really when I'm talking about overall wellness, I'm talking about like mindset, mentality, as we spoke, you know, a lot about abundance mindset in the past few weeks.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I guess now I'll pose you the question, how do you think knowledge really helps to mitigate stress? Because that's a lot of this is rooted in people being uncomfortable or unhappy or displacing whatever's happening in them psychologically onto their money management.
Yeah. So I feel like a broken record at this point in time. So I apologize if you all are going to guess what I'm about to say, but mitigating stress and anxiety, I should say, which is, you know, a cognitive symptom, is all about reframing a coping behavior. So we've talked a lot, I think really in every episode, because frankly, this is kind of our key value add, I think, and frankly, something that Aaron and I like to talk about. But as to say, if it's an everyday stressor, if it's not something monumental that's blown up your life that you have no control over, if it's an everyday stressor like financial stress, which if you're most stressed about finances, you are not alone. That is the number one stressor for most Americans. So you're in a good camp. We experience stress. It's stress is unavoidable, is basically my point. But yeah. It's how you reframe and overcome that stress that's really impactful. And this is where knowledge plays in. So when we've talked about reframing and we've talked about negative coping behaviors, we've talked about it from a mindfulness approach, which is to say, okay, I'm stressed. I am recognizing the symptoms of my stress and anxiety. And like, I'm present in that moment, right? That's mindfulness. Yeah. I'm present in that moment. Resilience is knowing that I have felt this stress before, so I'm recognizing it now. And since I've dealt with it and I've overcome it in the past, I know I will do that. Knowledge in that third pillar, in that third tier of like reframing and the topics we're talking about in terms of fostering financial wellness, knowledge comes in as the action. Like, this is why knowledge is my favorite topic, because yes. knowledge is what I can seek to look to. I feel stressed about how my portfolio is reacting to COVID. Well, I should probably get online and see what some of my favorite influencers, not Instagram influencers, like proper analysts, proper hedge funders, like proper people in the financial world who I value, what those people are saying. And frankly, then look into different sectors that I might find more advantageous than the ones that I'm currently losing money in right now.
Totally.
Knowledge is the tool that you use to act against that feeling of anxiety and impatience or stress or like whatever it is that's waking you up at night, right? Or preventing you from sleeping. Knowledge is the thing that can help you overcome the hurdle. Once you've overcome the hurdle with knowledge, you gain resilience over time. And so that's where knowledge plays in. And I speak to this as to say, like, this is why at Navit we're so focused on financial literacy, because it really is the root cause of financial wellness over time.
I can't agree more. And I think what's interesting there is that, you know, people might be able to say that, you know, first, there's self-knowledge, right? There's like, I am stressed,
right?
I am reacting, and then building over time your coping mechanism of like, wait a minute, I remember this emotion. I am self-aware. This, again, I keep going back to self-awareness, but I'm aware that I am stressful. That's part of knowledge. And then there is the external knowledge of like, and I function in a system mm-hmm. that everyone else functions in. So how do I learn and understand and gain knowledge in that system right. so that when these stressful mechanisms come or when my, you know, coping behavior starts or I start to have an emotion, I have an action. I think that's where right. you, like, that's your point. And I think it's so right. true because, and you don't, and I think one thing that's so important is that you don't have to know everything, right? Like, so you, know, you saying that, you know, to go to like financial analysts and influencers that you respect, that's taken you time to gain the knowledge to know who to go to, A, even to ask that question, B, to who to go to. Like, it, this is a very iterative process. And I think that, you know, we all, because there's so much fear and because there's risk involved with money, you come out at 21 or whatever out of your college, or even maybe 18 when you get into adulthood, and you're like, it's so overwhelming that that right. I think people stagnate, or right. I mean, they literally just look at their little bubble and they aren't kind to themselves to say, hey, like, this is a lifelong learning process. This is like right. literally, there's nothing that's going to be the same for you at 21 with your finances in your 30s and your 40s. Like, like this is, you cannot, it's a not one and done deal, right? Like you, right. you're gaining knowledge and your financial picture is changing. So thus right. you need to get more knowledge about different things over the entire course of your lifetime. Like, I'm not retired. Eventually I'm going to have to like reorganize all my brain about that, like about living yeah. in retirement. You know, like, it's just this really, like, I think we want kind of the quick fix, or like, oh, if I know this, then I know everything. And it's right. it's just not. And on top of that, last plug is technology is also changing the financial mm-hmm. system so much, and our generation, and Navid is a part of that, is like, how is technology now making it more accessible, and right. what can you do? And like, so knowledge is something that just is it's a constant, and you can be nice to yourself about, you don't know everything, but at least you're trying to learn, you know, whatever you're on, what topic you're on next.
Right, exactly. And I want to just quickly, before I dive into the next question, I want to speak to what you just spoke about. Yes. I want to highlight the reflection process and gaining the knowledge to understand the stress that you're going through. So I often talk about knowledge, and yeah, like, what are the tangible resources, the guides online, you know, the resources that we have on Navid, the, whether it be a quiz or Inspire Me or community group or whatever it is, I often talk about like the, you know, things I can read every day. But I think that there's a key point, and it kind of reflects back to my fitness topic and approach before, is to say, identifying how you feel is actually take some level of education, right? Because we all, and this is why we talk about fostering financial wellness as a key pillar of holistic health, because, you know, you're going to respond differently to anxiety and stress than I will. Erin's like a mega sleeper. She can sleep on command. She has no problem with it. It's totally fine. I cannot sleep, or I used to not be able to sleep very well until I kind of developed like these recognitions of what triggered me yes. and what woke me up at night. And, you know, part of that approach was preventative, right? I would say like, okay, I knew that I couldn't eat the bar of chocolate at 10 p.m. at night. I knew that I probably shouldn't stay on my computer working until that same time at night. Like, I knew my brain needed a power down time, and not everybody needs that, but for me, that was really critical. And so that would help me then prevent that stress and anxiety from manifesting at night. And at the same time, you know, I think we can get so wound up in our day-to-day activity and like day-to-day grind, especially in like the monotony of the COVID era, that you fail to recognize your physical responses to some of these cognitive issues. And I think that that's an important thing. So that's also why, like, you know, we talk about different physical components to your health at Navid, because it really does tie into your financial wellness. Because, you know, if you're not feeling well, for instance, that could be manifesting in a physical or a cognitive way. And that's going to change your approach to saving the $5 every day, back to my first statement. And it's all wrapped, knowledge is all wrapped around changing from a negative coping behavior to a positive coping behavior. And that's really what we're talking about. Like seeking something out proactively is positive rather than reverting back to that whole mindset of like, heck, I don't know, I'm just going to put it aside and I'll figure it out later. That's really what we're trying to mitigate against. All right. So I've spoken for way too long. Erin, how can we seek out financial resources and knowledge more easily?
Right. I mean, the beauty of our modern era is that the beauty and kind of the challenge is that there is a megalith of information online and in different resources. I think what we do at Navit, and I really liked what you were saying earlier, is like Maya and I fight to make sure that knowledge and like digestible information exists within our app as much as on, you know, in our brand, because we know that it's not like you see one thing and you know everything about that. You know, you read one article and you're like, no, you need building knowledge is little bits of digestible information about the same topic in different ways that it's presented. So for example, I mean, in school, I don't know if you, like everyone has different ways of learning, right? Like I am someone that is like, I listen, I'm an auditory learner. And the way I am sure that I know what they're talking about is I write it down. Like I'm taking notes, right? Some people totally visual, right? Like, and the most important is that consistently hearing the same topic over time is what actually creates like the full digestion of, okay, that information piece, and then eventually how you get to it. So for us, you know, we have this money management tool, see all your accounts, see your money. So that's the self-awareness, the self-knowledge, like see what's happening in your life in real time. And we break it up, you know, like your daily spend, what your transactions have been through the week. Like we have the same information broken up in many different ways so you can see the whole picture and digest it. So self-awareness. And then the next one is self-knowledge. And then the next one is, of course, then how is your personal situation related to how the overall external world works and the knowledge of the system that you're functioning in, and how, because one of the things that's really interesting, and we haven't talked about this recently, but inclusion and diversity is so important here. And I think our generation has this incredible access to the financial system that no, especially for women and people of color, like didn't have for many generations before. Literally the knowledge was like, you had to go to your bank, talk to your banker. Right. And there were a lot of biases and, you know, physical in-person reactions or your name, people were biased, you know, like had immediate reactions to your name or whatever, whatever. Now, literally it's gender neutral. It's race neutral. Like you download an app, they are not going to, you know, prevent you from starting to trade because of your name or because of your gender, or you know, that knowledge that used to be inaccessible in some ways is very functional. And so, and I mean, technology has opened up this ability to access that knowledge and understand the way the system works. So we combine those two. I mean, it's just really important for us. You have your self-awareness, self-knowledge, you have the knowledge of the system, and you combine those two to make the right choices for you. Because my last point is, knowledge historically in the financial system has implied that there is one right way, like of managing your money, right? And that's just total and utter crap, right? Like there is no one way to manage money. There is your way. But the knowledge of the system is one way. Right. Like the system, the way fees work, the way investing works, the way robo advisors are, the way checking and saving, that's one way. Like that is the system we function in. And so if you approach it from, I am going to manage my money, these are the priorities, my values, who I am, my stress coping, like whatever, my relationship with money. And here's the system I live in, and I can gain knowledge in that around that system, then I can choose my own path, and I can ideally move myself towards a wealthy future and healthy future. But again, it's like, I don't have to judge myself on others. I have to look internally at myself and say, do I understand myself, and do I understand the system I live in? And then I can move forward.
Right. I love it. Obviously, I love it. I think it's great. And I, you know, I want to ask this last question to you, as I think a lot of people, I know a lot of our users at least come to us kind of surprised that we can create bite-sized pieces of information and these nuggets of knowledge, right, around your financial roadmap and whatever path is best for you, per your point. But, you know, I have my own thoughts around this, but why do you think the industry has made it so challenging to find resources and make them as digestible as they should be?
Yeah, I think it has some to do with kind of what I was alluding to, the history of financial services being an elite history. And and I mean, I don't, you know me, I could go on a history, like long-term pontificating history lesson, but
we're not going to do that. We're keeping this one short.
But let me just say, you know, from the get-go in the United States, money and wealth was concentrated in one very specific demographic, and that was, and so women, even white women, and you know, people of any other color, even refugees, like even white people not born in America, like immigrants, you know, like they, there was a very small group of people that could function in the financial system and own property, and thus they only had to talk to each other, right? Like the language and the like knowledge only needed to be to a certain demographic. So over time, obviously, women got to own property in the late 1800s. You know, you have other like various events we got to vote, so participate in how the system, how the financial system was made. You know, that was only in the early 1900s. And then, of course, like people of color actually owning their own property and not actually being property, which is a whole nother issue. But the point is, you know, that's the history of this country, and it's really the history of Western, well, every civilization, let's be honest. So that, again, I'm really happy to have been born now in this generation where the internet has allowed knowledge to be everywhere, and the legal changes in the 70s has allowed everyone to be able to access that in some, you know, various levels of access, but it's at least there. So I think also, like, that's one of the core issues in the system and the knowledge like that. But the other element that I think you're going to go to is, and the banking and the financial system makes a lot of money on people making poor financial health choices. So it's not always right. And it's up to, it's really been the actual responsibility of the government to regulate those industries and say, you have to tell your clients what you're doing with their money and how you're making money off them. And that's like a push and pull between the financial services pushing back and the government being strong on it or weak on it over time. So yeah, I could go on forever, but go ahead. What are your thoughts?
I obviously, I think this is a very critical conversation and piece of the puzzle here, especially around the topic of seeking out resources for ourselves. And I think you hit the nail on the head. Obviously, you know, there's a monetary incentive for keeping people in the dark because that's the way the cookie crumbles, as they say. And, you know, and then that's how you can upsell into more expensive opportunities if you are, you know, one of those traditional banks offering those kinds of traditional services. But I think it's also, wrapping that up, I think it's one of the key opportunities and interesting opportunities and paths forward for everybody, and whether it be fintech or a traditional bank or, you know, whatever brokerage firm, as you now know that your customers have resources at their fingertips, you know, well, whether it be an endless stream of blogs or it be, you know, another app, but to make sure that you're speaking their language. And that's not to say that the consumer is dumb, not at all. The consumer is probably a lot smarter than you, analyst.
Yes.
However, the consumer has chosen to live their life in a different way than you have.
Right.
Therefore, they need to be, you know, therefore we need to lay out these processes in a much more dynamic, much more
transparent,
relatable and transparent way, because you know, most of us chose to live a much more exciting life, not in front of like 15 screens, crunching numbers. And that's okay. And I will say my last is a shameless plug-in, but I'm hosting a webinar next week with one of our dear friends and life and career coach around the topic of financial vulnerability. Right. And we see this kind of concept coming a lot. It's to say that, you know, most of at least our audience and most of the people that are, you know, maybe are listening, certainly myself, have been told at some time or another that we're not good at something that somehow relates to financial success.
Right.
And so that mantra, we have children in the background.
Sorry, you hear the like.
Okay, I love it.
He's on his break
plane. This is the podcasting during COVID.
Exactly.
But that's to say that there is a different path forward, and you know there are resources and topics that can be transparent to the consumer. You just have to know how to look for them and source them out and. Forget that whole, when we talk about negative coping mechanisms, forget those negative mantras that have told you that, you know, you're shitty at math, therefore you're shitty at money.
Yep.
It's not, exactly. That's not a correlation at all. I heard something interesting the other day and then I'll shut up. Somebody saying that in times of COVID, there's EQ is really having its day. It's like, having to stay month, year, future. So you're really pivoting from looking, it was talking to kind of startups and founders of startups, but to say that like the founders that have done well on IQ won't survive.
Right.
It's the founders that have done well through EQ and have realized, you know, that they can't solve every puzzle and need to figure out a different path forward that will get through this hopefully a little bit more strongly.
Right.
I personally felt that resonated because I was an English major who like got a C in stats, you know, so I just thought that was great.
And what's interesting about that is like the humanity of it. So like, you know, I had this product that was solving a problem that was going to work in the IQ world, but like EQ is like, people are going through an emotional roller coaster right now. And there's a lot going on. So how can I support and serve this population that is shifting and in flux and are stressed and all these things. So I really like that. Just to circle back one more point about the financial services. If you understand the way money works, you also know that fees are key. Like the higher they can put their interest rates on debt, on like whatever your credit card or whatever, is like an incredible margin for them. They're always going to make more money. So if you just know that fees are the thing that you have to look out for and that there are always people competing to give you a lower fee, that's like the root of the entire damn thing, right? Yeah. Like that's how they all make, that's how wealth managers make money. That's how banks make money. So if you start there and you kind of say, okay, like what is, and we, and at Navit, we have calculators in our app that you can like play with it. Say, okay, if I have a $5,000 loan and it's this low APR, this APR, like how much am I really paying over time? Because that's what they're not incentivized to tell you. And I think, you know, those, again, that knowledge, just once you understand the way the system works, you just have the power. Because my point is really, you, no one in this system is going to really advocate for you. We are trying as a brand, like we believe that is part of our role, is to, you know, provide transparent and honest information about how the system works to our customers. But in general, the financial system, they are not incentivized to advocate or do the right thing by you. So thus, gaining knowledge and being your own advocate is going to be the thing that makes you the most successful over time. And so you just, I mean, I think that in real estate and everything, it's like the more you know, the more you understand, you can advocate for yourself and get the best deal. So yeah, that's my last plug for knowledge.
I love that. And now I'm going to leave, I'm going to ask you one more question. That's a bit of our kind of lightning round question, but
yes.
When was the last time you learned something new?
Oh, man.
And what did you learn?
And what did I learn? Oh, yeah. Girl, I feel like I'm learning every day in this job. We have recently started fundraising, and it has been a big leap for me to fully embrace all the equity, cap table, convertible note details. And full disclosure, that, you know, that was a huge psychological jump for me to not be afraid and to, you know, start to have, like, to truly embrace taking other people's investment and doing that in a way that benefits our company and also benefits the investor. So yeah, I feel like I've fully embraced the idea of a seed round and what that means and all the documents and legalese that I have to understand.
Ditto. I have nothing to add, and I completely agree. So we have some really exciting new episodes coming out in June. We'll definitely talk more about, I think, seed fundraising is an interesting topic, but most specifically is we talk about equity in the startup world. A lot of people have come to us with questions about how to negotiate your own equity and different levels of that. So we'll definitely be bringing up topics. And our next episode will be joined by two-time Olympian Dagmara Wozniak to talk with us, about kind of things we've been talking about resilience, about retiring early, and really throwing this whole concept of FIRE on its head, especially in times of COVID. So look out for that. Thanks so much for joining us and tuning in, and we'll be back with you soon. Thanks, Erin.
Thanks, Maya. Thanks, everyone.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Care to continue the convo? You can connect with fellow navigators in the app or on our Let's Navit Facebook page. Oh, and be sure to get social with us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Let's Navit. That's LetsNavit. And finally, wherever you're listening to this podcast, it would really help us if you would take a minute to rate, review, and subscribe. That's it for today's episode. Until next time,
Let's Navit!